to What Is It About the Weather? The weekly podcast where we discuss all things weather intertwined and weather related, but not the weather. I'm your host, Mark Jelinek, and this week we're going to be talking about weather ignorance and if it could kill you. But before we do that, let me say I hope you've had an enjoyable intertwined weather week. You've learned something new, maybe you thought about weather in a different way, and for that matter, I hope you've had enjoyable weather as well. I know for me this week, weather got intertwined into my, what I would call my historic career, which is more in the tech space. For those that really don't know my story, technology's always kind of been a part of my career and part of my background and something I enjoy. And even as I've gotten into the field of meteorology, technology's continued to play a role, and coding has been an aspect of that, whether it's working on weather products or working with weather data and research, whatever it might be. But this past week, it was a holiday week here, so I did a holiday-oriented thing, right? I went to my computer, right? That's what everybody does on the holidays, right? And starts working on learning a new coding language, right? That's what all you guys do. No, of course you don't. But I'm kicking off a couple new projects, and Python was going to be part of it. Not the snakes, but the coding language. So it was time for me to add that to my little bag of tricks. And of course, as with all coding languages, there's, those that do code know every coding language. There's a great shirt or something out there with just a bunch of punctuation with some, maybe somebody screaming at the end, because it evolves. Every language a little different, but I've worked with ones where periods are important, semicolons are important. And with Python, one of the big things is more about indentation. And it's just one of those things you got to adjust to, but it takes a while when I'll flip back to some other language. And I even had that this week where it needed a semicolon in a place where I had a comma, and it was driving me nuts, and I figured it out. But it's just a reminder that every language, whether it's spoken or whether it's coding or whether it's math or whatever it is, they all have their little things that are trigger points between understanding and not understanding, or working and not working. So I've been engulfed in that arena. The other thing I came across, though, that'll probably be a heck of a lot more interesting to you guys, is the Juno probe. And for those that don't know, this is a big probe that was sent out. Now it's right around Jupiter, taking pictures like we've never seen before. And I'll put a link in the show notes to an article by Angela Fritz, the Capital Weather Gang, that kind of overviews what's going on there. But also know that coming up on the 10th, I believe, we're going to get pictures of Jupiter's big red eye storm that we've never had them before, which is just, it'll be incredible. I'm so looking forward to it. This year here, we've had a new one over, parts of the hurricane space that, was big this time of year. The new GOES 16 satellite that's giving us incredible imagery we never had. But imagine doing the same thing on Jupiter. We've, through little tiny telescopes, we've looked at that storm for ages, for centuries. Weather forecast, Yes, today the big red dot will have winds in excess of 380 miles an hour. God, I can't even imagine trying to do forecast for a planet that big and for storms that big. I mean, this thing, we're talking scales that just, I don't know, it's mind-boggling. But I'm really looking forward to the pictures. So take a look at that story and keep an eye out for those if you find that kind of stuff interesting, because the imagery so far has been incredible, and I just have to imagine for this kind of fascinating phenomena that we've watched for, like I said, centuries, that it's going to be really interesting to see what it looks like and what we learn, or just what it looks like, even if not all of us learn something out of it. All right, so let's dive into the main story. Weather ignorance. And I am using the word ignorance here because, as Forrest Gump taught us, stupid is as stupid does. So don't let ignorance become stupidity and repeat actions that there's no justification for. But for most of us, it really is ignorance. We either haven't updated ourselves, or it's just not things that we think about all the time. For most folks, that's life. Not everybody's supposed to be a weather expert. Not everybody's studying and understanding not just the weather, but the realities when it comes to how we respond, what's the best thing to do, those sort of things. So we really don't want weather ignorance to hurt anybody. Those of you listening, those of folks we care about, or anybody, quite frankly. So let's do what we can to kind of, I don't know, run through some of those. Now, I want to thank Steve for making the episode suggestion. He had not, I don't think, had heard the weather lore one when he first kind of made the suggestion about weather misconceptions and myths. And so I iterated with him a little bit on it, and we talked about, you know, the lore thing's kind of, it's not necessarily myths, but it's more of like interesting tidbits and whether they're true or not. So I talked with him about taking it more about the misconceptions that we have, and in particular, the safety angle. You know, what's the risk of misconceptions more than just things, you know, that we may not understand? And he signed off on the final outline, so hopefully the episode will be to his liking and everybody's liking. But thanks again, Steve. Again, I appreciate all of you who send in show ideas, and I do like to iterate with folks on it and really make it something that, you know, is useful for everybody. Now, we're going to go through five things, but before I dig into them, I just want to preface by saying I'm going to put in the show notes a link to kind of facts, myths about at least one about each of these topics, but also the National Weather Service, and I mentioned the Weather Ready Nation before, they sent us great links to weather safety, and I will have links to safety elements on each of these topics so that none of us have to be weather ignorant, and we're all up to date on what the latest thinking is on how to protect yourself in these particularly potentially dangerous situations, right, that are going to happen. Nothing we can do about that part of it. It's about how we respond when they do happen. So let's start with tornadoes. And we're going to start there because it's, you know, it's the one in the movies. And things come in movies and it's in a movie and therefore it must be real. It's like watching Twister. I don't know. First, the odds on that truck getting through that house. Yeah, okay. But, you know, and magically it goes in with a busted windshield, comes out with a perfectly intact windshield, which makes us all think, if I'm in a tornado and drive through a house, I'll have free window repair while I go through that house. And everything will just work out fine. All right, we know that's a movie, but it happens in real life, okay? And there's a few things that, I don't know, people get in their minds, or it's because it's been a long time that it's happened, that, and this won't be just with tornadoes, that it just becomes part of our knowledge base that's not necessarily true. So the first of these is that somehow tornadoes only hit certain areas. Well, the reality is they're location agnostic. Now, that does not mean that there's not tornado-prone areas, and we've discussed that before. But within those areas, tornadoes don't magically go around cities. They don't miss valleys. They don't dissipate as soon as they touch a river. Any of these sort of things. I mean, as we talked about, you know, a tornado can pick up fish from a river and give us non-aqueous rain, right? So within those realities, know that we've had a big one here in Atlanta that went, you can still see years later, we have a big hotel in downtown Atlanta. And when it first happened, it was more obvious. This building used to be the tallest building in Atlanta. It's not anymore, but you could see where the windows that they had to replace on this hotel were drastically different color. It's not as much now as it used to be, but it's just a reminder that yes, dangerous tornadoes can plow through a city. Big cities, geographically, don't take up a lot of space compared to the vast expanse of, you know, just earth area. So you're going to hear about tornadoes, and you're going to hear about them plowing through regions that are small or, you know, aren't heavily populated. But paths go through everywhere, and eventually they're going to hit big cities, and they're going to plow and put a lot of people in harm's way if you're thinking that somehow magically tornadoes are going to go around cities. And yes, I know well-intentioned people who have led people to believe that that's the case. And that, you know, whether that was, I don't think that was their point, but it happens. And no, you know, if a tornado is coming to your area, you shouldn't magically drive to a big city. It just doesn't even make sense. So yes, tornadoes can hit big cities. They can hit valleys. They can hit towns supposedly protected by hills, whatever it might be. If you're in a tornado area, it can get there. Now, the other parts of where we've kind of gone wrong over time, or with the knowledge we had, even maybe we put out thoughts and ideas of how to protect yourself. You've heard probably before that during a storm, if you're out on a freeway somewhere, get to an overpass and get out of your car and go up under the overpass. And that was actually built on a real story that happened for somebody that survived a tornado. But what we know is that's exactly what you shouldn't be doing. One, you shouldn't be out. But in theory, if you're going to get out of your car, you actually want to make yourself as low to the ground as possible. The idea, and this is what we're learning in general, it's the same idea of when a tornado's coming to your area, open the windows in your house to equalize the pressure. Now, you know, it may sound interesting, but again, a branch being thrown around is going to plow through a window. And if you spend all your time opening windows instead of getting to a safer space, an interior space, a low-level space that can provide hopefully some level of protection, it doesn't make sense, even if the pressure's equalized inside and outside. Or even in the southwest corner of the basement. So all these ideas, they were built out of some thinking, right? But the thinking has evolved, and so do we need to. So know that all those things I just mentioned are not things to do. You know, don't go to the overpass. Don't focus on the southwest corner of the basement. Now, that's not to say that, you know, if all things considered, that may not be a good corner, but that's just not, it's not what you should seek out, right? And certainly they are actually showing now that the overpass is probably the wrong place to go with a tornado, no matter if Twister, if that's what they did. Any case, read up on these things as we go along and update your knowledge when it comes to tornado, where the right places to be are. And just remember that you aren't going to be safer in a location just because that location has something that you think is unique about it. If a tornado is going to plow through, it's going to plow through. All right, let's move on to hurricanes, tropical cyclones, whatever you want to call them, typhoons. Yeah, that's one of the misconceptions. Typhoons are more powerful than hurricanes. It's got nothing to do with it. It's just a different naming scheme. For that matter, hurricanes, some of the most dangerous things sometimes for people could be the tornadoes spawned out of them. And we had this recently. We had this kind of ugly-looking tropical cyclone. You know, ugly, I say ugly on the satellite. It didn't look like a classical tropical cyclone just this year. And it was spawning huge amounts of rain and flooding and some tornadoes. And it was just a lowly tropical storm. So it doesn't matter how it looks on satellite. It doesn't have to look big and scary. And the other thing we've been fixated on over the years is the scales. And the scales traditionally have been very focused just on the wind element, right? But the reality with a hurricane is they can be big, they can be small. The dangerous part of the wind field and how it's expanded, we're gaining knowledge that we just didn't used to have. So trying to have something on a scale before made some sense because we didn't have nice satellite pictures and we weren't able to discern where the dangerous wind field was. But even aside from that, with hurricanes, right, all these scales and focus on wind speed, it's not the bigger thing. Quite often, the biggest killer is the water. Between the surge and the flooding, that tends to be the bigger killer. Now, there are newer scales that are trying to incorporate that, but so much with hurricane, it's about understanding the storm and understanding where you are. Are you in a exposed area? Are you in a flood-prone area? Those things are going to be more important. And again, I get back to the same thing. And this gets to people with evacuation. We didn't evacuate because the last time one came through, we were fine. Well, you know what? Did it come through? Did it look the same? Did it come through from the same angle? Were you in the same spot compared to where you're going to be this time? And, you know, I was reading different things about how far inland you got to go. Here, one of the bigger challenges always is we have the state of Florida here. And different regions like Bangladesh, it's a very similar thing. It's a very exposed, low-lying area. And that's why there's been these devastating events there. It's as much about the water and about the reality of trying to evacuate, for instance, from the Keys of Florida or Miami and getting to a safe elevation space can be very difficult, and you have to go very far away, potentially. Whereas other areas, you may only have to go a certain amount inland before you're to a safer zone that's more likely to provide you the protection you need. So the key is to be aware of what the storm is doing and what's being forecasted. There's no excuse anymore for like getting a forecast once a day if you've got a potential tropical cyclone going to be barreling down on you. You know, we carry around these little mobile devices. Be aware, all right? I was even reading an article where somebody said something about, it was kind of humorous, should I prune my trees the day before the storm arrives? And they're like, well, that's a good idea. But unless you've got some magical way to dispose of all that debris being picked up and thrown around is probably more dangerous off the tree to where it's already nice and cut for it, the storm, than it is on it. Now, I don't know all the studies. I don't know that significant studies have been done. But it's just a reminder that some things just don't even make sense logically, maybe. And at 24 hours, maybe you should be thinking about evacuating versus whether you need to be pruning your trees. All right, blizzards. Now, blizzards is an interesting one because this phrase is misused all the time. Things are called blizzards that aren't really a blizzard. And there's criteria for what a blizzard is. And it has to do with how long things last. And it has to do with snow not necessarily falling, though. It can be just blowing snow. And that, you know, so there's, again, we get into these, you know, same thing with hurricanes or tropical storms or tornadoes and, you know, what the finite definitions are. And the same thing happens with blizzards. But it really is, to really be a blizzard, it's a combination of snow, winds, visibility, and length of time. But when you think about, you know, just winter weather, so if we take it off that and realize that sometimes the word blizzard's misused, and it doesn't have to be a blizzard to be dangerous, right? So a couple of just misconceptions that we hear sometimes when it comes to winter precip, not even necessarily a blizzard, is it's too cold to snow. Now, the reality is most places on this planet, it would even be hard-pressed for any of them to ever not really be able to snow. Now, there's some reasons, again, that we get in the atmospheric dynamics that it may not happen if it was really cold because of the stability versus instability situation, but it's like lake effect snow. Can be picked up and carried from other places. So a lot of it has to do with where you are. But just know that, yes, as the air gets colder, it can hold less moisture. And that may change the type of snow that you get. It may not be big, fluffy, flaky snow. It might be little crystals. But, man, if it's really cold and windy, even little ice molecules would be painful and dangerous. The other one that I hear a lot is it's too warm to stick to the ground. It's going to melt. Everything's going to melt. It's too warm. Now, I live in an area that this kind of is a common thinking. And yes, it's true that if the ground's been warm for a long time, that it's going to be kind of prone to melt, the snow, if it falls. But if it falls fast enough, that won't matter. And also keep in mind that not much of that layer of ground needs to be chilled for things to start sticking, right? It's not like, yeah, the ground may be warm, but if that top layer gets cold enough, it will stick. And quite frankly, that could even be, the situation could be even more dangerous because if things start to melt to start with and the cold air continues to persist, then that stuff refreezes in the ice, then there's snow on top of it, and then you've got what we call black ice, which is, you know, all the people like to laugh at Southerners for not being able to drive, but so many of our situations are just like that. That when it first starts, the precipitation first starts, it melts, and then it freezes. And trust me, a car doesn't like ice. Any vehicle doesn't like ice. Bodies don't like ice. And those are a lot of times the more dangerous situations. So if snow can reach the ground, here's the thing to keep in mind, and it doesn't even have to, but if snow is actually reaching all the way to the ground, that means there's cold air all the way to the ground, right? And that also means that at some point, as long as the cold air is sticking around a little bit, it's going to be cold enough. Yeah, sure, a day from now it may melt quicker because the ground's not frozen like a rock, but it may not matter, right? If you're out plowing around, I mean, I've lived through, I don't know how many episodes here in this city where, you know, people are supposedly caught off guard, and there's no reason to think that way. If potentially dangerous winter precipitation. And this is the other thing you got to keep in mind. One of the reasons winter weather is so tricky and why we talk about blizzards a lot, even if they're not actually blizzards, is, man, there's nothing worse than dealing with a car accident or something like that when it's cold outside. And anybody that's ever dealt with that knows you bump into something and it's cold and it just hurts more. But trying to deal with it in a blizzard, it's about, again, it's as focused on as much about the visibility and the danger you're putting yourself in to get disoriented. Or again, like if you're on the road, to potentially run into somebody. All right, two more I want to talk about quickly, but that are relevant, are heat. And you've heard me talk about heat before and about how heat is the big killer. Two things that I hear about a lot. It has to be so many degrees outside to be dangerous. And you know what? This is really a relative thing. And I came across an interesting thing of all things from the U.S. Army, who talks about heat and being acclimatized to it or acclimating to it when you're not used to it. And the body actually does a pretty good job, but it takes a little bit of time. So usually when the heat kicks in each year, it takes a while for our body to adjust to kind of that way of thinking. And there is a component that's also, if you're used to it in a certain area. So people that live in really hot areas, they say their bodies can more easily acclimate because it knows what to do because it's got that trained experience. But anybody can learn to adjust to heat, and we all do in some way. But that might be too late if a heat wave comes on early in the season or not. You know, we've been dealing with that some here in the U.S. this year, and I've seen it in other places. I know heat waves that I was reading about in Europe, and you know, it's a reminder that it can come and catch you out of nowhere. And you know, humidity comes into play. It's like the whole thing. It's the dry heat. It's a dry heat. Well, you know, there's a real danger with supposedly dry heat, and I've lived in a zone like that too. That because you know, unlike here where I know it because you're sweating and the sweat's not evaporating, there you're still sweating and it is evaporating. And before you know it, you're dehydrated. And a lot of times heat stroke or heat illnesses come on and it's almost too late by the time your body, you're feeling the elements of it. So it's important to be aware of the heat and recognize that it's still sneaky. It's not one of these big, again, I get back to the same things I've talked about in past episodes. It's not a big visual thing. But heat and the amount of humidity and how much you're used to it and all those things come into play about the likely danger for you and your ability to escape it, your ability to get into air conditioning or some way to dissipate the heat. I mean, that's what we're always talking about doing. When you're sweating, you're trying to do that, right? And when it's really muggy, you're not able to dissipate the heat. So that's one type of thing, right? That leads to certain responses in our bodies. But on the flip side, as I said, when it's really dry and you are able to dissipate the heat from your body, if you're not replenishing your fluids, it's a different set of problems. So heat still is a dangerous thing. You just need to be thinking about and aware of drinking and trying to stay cool, right? And of course, the last one is lightning. And this is kind of like tornadoes. So we're going to cap it with two kind of visually stunning things. And you know, it's weird little things. I mean, you hear about misconceptions like sheet lightning or heat lightning or silent lightning that you hear about summertime in certain areas where, you know, nighttime and you see all these flashes of lightning or the sky's lighting up and you're not seeing it. It's not a different type of lightning. It's just far enough away to where you're not hearing it. It's still the same lightning. And it might be a nice indicator that things are heading your way and you need to be cognizant of it. But probably the more important things are, and we're learning more about this in general, about, you know, lightning rods and whether they really work and things like that. But one of the newer things that we're starting to understand is whether you've got earphones in or something metal close by to you, it really doesn't matter as much anymore. Our newer knowledge tells us, and this may change, our understanding may change, of course, that once the lightning starts, and, you know, I've got some pictures out there, and you can see it with all these little feeders that it's putting out there trying to reach ground. And we've even talked about, you know, lightning up versus lightning down. We've done episodes on that in the past. All these things are showing us that lightning's just trying to neutralize. It's just trying to find a path to ground, right? So you being close to metal, generally speaking, will not change whether that lightning's going to be dangerous to you. The real reality is there's no such thing as a good place to be outside. Used to be hide under a tree because it's kind of the same thing with thinking about the moisture from a storm. water's beating off, well, somehow lightning won't hit you. Or be out in an open space, so it's a reverse of that. Or lie flat on the ground. And what we can find now is if lightning strikes close to you, being flat on the ground could actually cause you more harm than if you were standing upright and it hit close to you. The key is to not be outside. Now, you're not always protected inside. You, again, at that point, you really should make sure you're not touching metal things that are not grounded or there's not some other path for that lightning to go through. But generally speaking, the rule of thumb is, as the saying goes, if it roars, head indoors. And it's just because no matter where you are outside, that lightning can hit you. And you just need to be aware of it. So like I said, with all these things, look in the show notes, update your thinking, and know that what we thought 10 years ago, and this is probably the bigger thing, what we thought 10 years ago, what we thought 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, there's a good chance that our understanding and our knowledge has changed to where we're not as ignorant about the weather and about how the weather is interacting with the planet and our surroundings, that has changed our ability to better survive and better protect ourselves. So be aware of those things. Don't be weather ignorant. Don't let weather harm you when it doesn't have to. So here's the walkaways from this, right? Let's cap a couple things. One is, you got these little mobile devices. I was sitting somewhere yesterday. Man, who's not flipping through their mobile device? Take the time, if you're in an area with certain types of weather that come up certain seasons, make sure you're current on what the thinking is, you know, and use reputable sites to do that, please, or validate it, right? Double check it. Look for something that references maybe some research into it as opposed to just, you know, Bob survived, Shark Fest at 11, whatever it might be. So do that seasonally, and also do it when you travel. If you're going to someplace and you're traveling, flip through and know. You know, what the weather's going to be like. You planned it. You planned your trip. And if it's not something you're used to, just put a little knowledge in your head. It's not that hard. Like I said, we got these walking encyclopedias and information sources at our fingertips. There's no excuse anymore. So plan ahead and do it as well, not just with your knowledge, but if you are in these regions, you know, it's like I lived in Syracuse, New York, and there were some very common sense things. Some salt in the trunk, a snow shovel, and a blanket. Just, it was common sense things. Same thing with these tornado kits. And like I said, they've evolved. They now include having a helmet. So update your thinking with the latest information. So don't get caught off guard, particularly if you're in areas that you need to be. Keep your knowledge current for where you are and the season you're going into. And be aware of places that you're going or are going to be, you know, vacationing in or traveling on work, whatever it might be. Just be aware if there's other conditions that you might need to brush up on. And lastly, help inform others currently. And don't feel like you have to know it. It's easy, again, to recommend a source like we do on the podcast to send other people to. All right, I hope that everybody's weather ignorance is now vastly different than it was at the start of this episode. But let's not be ignorant. Let's be weather wise and save lives, okay? Now, last week we talked about the rate part of RSVP. I'm going to get into this. Like I said, somewhere here we're going to cover a couple different things. Share. This is one that I know you guys have been good at. Because, you know, I talked to you and so, I heard about you from this and that, and I probably don't ask as much. I probably should do a better job about asking that. But last week we talked about rating, and I noticed a few of you did a couple different things, but it's never too late, remember? The rate aspect of it, whether it's iTunes, whether it's going in and subscribing on the YouTube page or the Facebook page or whatever it is. The rate is very focused on people we don't know and discovering us. The share thing, it's very obvious. It's just telling other people about it. I don't care if it's popping up an email, having a conversation with somebody, it's sending a tweet to people you know, though, email, right? Whatever it might be. The share aspect is looking to people that you're already familiar with and just saying, hey, this is something worth checking out. You might enjoy it. So like I said, it's an area that I don't I'm not as hung up on this one because you guys already do a good job with this one. And so I'm not going to go into maybe as deep of an explanation. But that's what the share element means. So from a discoverability standpoint, that means making sure that you're communicating about the podcast with people that you already know. That's the subtle difference from the rate aspect. Yes, I did talk with someone about this and the differences between that this week. Any case, let's close with that. RSVP, rate, share, validate, and pledge, right? Each one of those is important. Each one of them provides a method of support that's critical to what we do here with the podcast and hopefully keeping it fresh, informative, interesting, all those things, so that you want to keep listening and staying subscribed. Or subscribing if you've never subscribed before. If you want to get in touch, there's a couple of easy ways to do it. whatisitabouttheweather@gmail.com. Or just go to whatisitabouttheweather.com/contact. And there's a nice little form there that you can fill out. And either of those is good for me. I mean, you can try hitting me up on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And some people do. And that's fine too. I respond those ways. Any of them are fine. Maybe at some point I'll do a phone thing. I don't know. I don't know anybody wants to send me a message. Maybe we'll figure out a way to do that. But however you're doing it, you know, that feedback and reaching out, whether it's a show idea or just comments, it is very helpful. And so it's appreciated. So as you're enjoying your summer in the Northern Hemisphere, your winter in the Southern Hemisphere, I'll remind you that I hope your weather is intertwined in your life in an interesting way. Because as we all know, there's much more to weather than the weather itself.
This is a Two White Sofa production.
We're tired of hearing our uncle grovel, so please support him on patreon.com/weather.